Chapter 15. Stewart's boys nudging and pushing and flapping tablecloths over them. I shaved and made a neat toilet and came upon deck just as we lay off that little Dutch fort, which is, I dare say, described in Urey's guidebook, and about which I had some rare banter with poor Hicks and Lady Kickleberry, whose sense of humor is certainly not very keen. He had, somehow, joined her ladyship's party, and they were looking at the fort, and its TRI-colored flag that floats familiar in Vandevold's pictures, and at the lazy shipping, and the tall roofs, and dumpy church towers, and flat pastures, lying before us in a kite-like haze. I am sorry to say, I told them the most awful fibs about that fort. How it had been defended by the Dutch patriot, Van Swammerdam, against the united forces of the Duke of Alva and Marshal Turin, whose leg was shot off as he was leading the last unsuccessful assault, and who turned round to his aide-de-camp and said, Alice Diran, Premier Consul, K.G. Muirs of Vec regret the ne pas avoir asses fate pour la France, which gave Lady Kickleberry an opportunity to place her story of the Duke of York, and the bombardment of Valenciennes, and caused young Hicks to look at me in a puzzled and appealing manner and hint that I was chaffing. Chaffing indeed, says I, with a particularly arch eye twinkle at Miss Fanny. Wouldn't make fun of you, Captain Hicks. If you doubt my historical accuracy, look at the biography in Iversell. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I say, look at the biography in Iversell. Apostrophe, he said, oh, autobiography in Iversell may be all vooey well, and that, but I never can make out, whether you are joking or not, somehow, and I always fancy you are going to caricature me. Ha, ha. And he laughed, the good-natured dragoon laughed, and fancied he had made a joke. I entreated him not to be so severe upon me. And again he said, ha ha, and told me, I mustn't expect to have it all my own way, and if I gave a hit, I must expect a punch in return. Ha ha. Oh, you honest young Hicks. Everybody, indeed, was in high spirits. The fog cleared off, the sun shone, the ladies chatted and laughed, even Mrs. Milliken was in good humor. Why, wife is all intellect, Milliken says, looking at her with admiration, and talked with us freely and gaily. She was kind enough to say that it was a great pleasure to meet with a literary and well-informed person, that one often lived with people that did not comprehend one. She asked if my companion, that tall gentleman Mr. Sergeant Lankin, was literary. And when I said that Lankin knew more Greek, and more Latin, and more law, and more history, and more everything, than all the passengers put together, she vouchsafed to look at him with interest, and enter into a conversation with my modest friend the sergeant. Then it was that her adoring husband said, as Lavinia was all intellect, Lady Kickleberry saying that she was not a literary woman, that in her day few acquirements were requisite for the British female, but that she knew the spirit of the age, and her duty as a mother, and that Lavinia and Fanny had had the best masters, and the best education which money, and constant maternal solicitude could impart. If our matrons are virtuous, as they are, and it is Britain's boast, permit me to say that they certainly know it. The conversation growing powerfully intellectual under Mrs. Milliken, poor Hicks naturally became uneasy, and put an end to literature, by admiring the ladies' headdresses. Abheads, hoods, what do you call 'em? He asked of Miss Kickleberry. Indeed, she and her sister wore a couple of those blue silk over bonnets, which have lately become the fashion, and which I never should have mentioned, but for the young lady's reply. Those hoods. She said he called those hoods uglies. Captain Hicks. Oh, how pretty she looked as she said it. The blue eyes looked up under the blue hood, so archly and gaily, ever so many dimples began playing about her face. Her little voice rang so fresh and sweet that a heart which has never loved a tree or flower but the vegetable in question was sure to perish, a heart worn down and sickened by repeated disappointment, mockery, faithlessness, a heart whereof despair is an accustomed tenant, and in whose desolate and lonely depths dwells an abiding gloom, began to throb once more, began to beckon hope from the window, began to admit sunshine, began to, oh folly, folly! Oh Fanny! Oh Miss K, how lovely you looked as you said, we call those hoods uglies. Ugly indeed. This is a chronicle of feelings and characters, not of events and places, so much. All this time our vessel was making rapid way up the river, and we saw before us the slim towers of the noble cathedral of Antwerp soaring in the rosy sunshine. Lankin and I had agreed to go to the Rand Laborer, or the Place de Mer. They give you a particular kind of jam tarts there called nun's tarts. I think that I remember, these 20 years, as the very best tarts, as good as the tarts which we ate when we were boys. The Aberer is a dear old quiet comfortable hotel, and there is no man in England who likes a good dinner better than Lankin. What hotel do you go to? I asked of Lady Kickleberry. We go to the Saint Antoine, of course. Everybody goes to the Saint Antoine, her ladyship said. He proposed to rest here, to do the Rubens, and to proceed to Cologne tomorrow. Horace, call Finch and Bowman, and your courier, if he will have the condescension to wait upon me, will perhaps look to the baggage. I think, Lankin, said I, as everybody seems going to the Saint Antoine, apostrophe we may as well go, and not spoil the party. I think I'll go too, says Hicks, as if he belonged to the party. And oh, it was a great sight when we landed, and at every place at which we paused afterwards, to see her shoulder the Kickleberry baggage, and hear his polyglot maledictions at the porters. If a man sometimes feels sad and lonely at his bachelor condition, if some feelings of envy pervade his heart, at seeing beauty on another's arm, and kind eyes directed towards a happier mug than his own, at least there are some consolations in traveling, when a fellow has but one little portmanteau or bag which he can easily shoulder, and thinks of the innumerable bags and trunks which the married man and the father drags after him. The married Briton on the tour is but a luggage overseer. His luggage is his morning thought, and his nightly terror. When he floats along the Rhine he has one eye on a ruin, and the other on his luggage. When he is in the railroad he is always thinking, or ordered by his wife to think, is the luggage safe? It clings round him. It never leaves him except when it does leave him, as a trunk or two will, and make him doubly miserable. His carpet bags lie on his chest at night, and his wife's forgotten bandbox haunts his turbid dreams. I think it was after she found that Lady Kickleberry proposed to go to the Grand Saint Antoine that Lady Knightsbridge put herself with her maid into a carriage, and went to the other inn. We saw her at the cathedral, where she kept aloof from our party. Milliken went up the tower, and so did Miss Fanny. I am too old a traveler to mount up those immeasurable stairs for the purpose of making myself dizzy by gazing upon a vast map of low countries stretched beneath me, and waited with Mrs. Milliken and her mother below. When the tower climbers descended, we asked Miss Fanny and her brother what they had seen. We saw Captain Hicks up there, remarked Milliken. And I am very glad you didn't come, Lavinia, my love. The excitement would have been too much for you, quite too much. All this while Lady Kickleberry was looking at Fanny, and Fanny was holding her eyes down, and I knew that between her and this poor Hicks there could be nothing serious, for as he had laughed at him and mimicked him to me half a dozen times in the course of the day. We owe the Rubens, as Lady Kickleberry says. We trudge from cathedral to picture gallery, from church to church. We see the calm old city, with its towers and gables, the bourse, and the vast town hall, and I have the honor to give Lady Kickleberry my arm during these peregrinations, and to hear 100 particulars regarding her ladyship's life and family. How Milliken has been recently building at Piggyonkit. How he will have 2,000 a year more when his uncle dies. How as he had peremptorily to put a stop to the assiduities of that unprincipled young man, Lord Roughhead, whom Lavinia always detested, and who married Miss Brent out of sheer pique. It was a great escape for her darling Lavinia. Roughhead is a most wild and dissipated young man, one of Kickleberry's Christchurch friends, of whom her son has too many, alas. And she enters into many particulars respecting the conduct of Kickleberry, the unhappy boy smoking, his love of billiards, his fondness for the turf. She fears he has already injured his income, she fears he is even now playing at Noirborg. She is going thither to wean him, if possible, from his companions and his gaieties, what may not a mother effect? She only wrote to him the day before they left London to announce that she was marching on him with her family. He is in many respects like his poor father, the same openness and frankness, the same easy disposition. Alas, the same love of pleasure. But as he had reformed the father, and will do her utmost to call back her dear misguided boy, as he had an advantageous match for him in view, a lady not beautiful in person, it is true, but possessed of every good principle, and a very, very handsome fortune. It was under pretense of flying from this lady that Kickleberry left town. But she knew better. I say young men will be young men, and sow their wild oats, and think to myself that the invasion of his mama will be perhaps more surprising than pleasant to young Sir Thomas Kickleberry, and that she possibly talks about herself and her family, and her virtues and her daughters, a little too much. But she will make a confidant of me, and all the time we are doing the Rubens she is talking of the pictures at Kickleberry, of her portrait by Lawrence, pronounced to be his finest work, of Lavinia's talent for drawing, and the expense of Fanny's music masters, of her house in town where she hopes to see me, of her parties which were stopped by the illness of her butler. She talks Kickleberry until I am sick. And oh, Miss Fanny, all of this I endure, like an old fool, for an occasional sight of your bright eyes and rosy face. Another parenthesis. He hoped to see you in town, Mr. Titmarsh. Foolish mockery. If all the people whom one has met abroad, and who have said, we hope to meet you often in town, had but made any the slightest efforts to realize their hopes, by sending a simple line of invitation through the penny post, what an enormous dinner acquaintance one would have had. But I mistrust people who say, we hope to see you in town. Lankin comes in at the end of the day, just before dinner time. He has paced the whole town by himself, church, tower, and fortifications, and Rubens, and all. He is full of Egmont and Alva. He is up to all the history of the siege, when Chassy defended, and the French attacked the place. After dinner we stroll along the quays, and over the quiet cigar in the hotel court, Monsieur Lankin discourses about the Rubens pictures, in a way which shows that the learned sergeant has an eye for pictorial beauty as well as other beauties in this world, and can rightly admire the vast energy, the prodigal genius, the royal splendor of the King of Antwerp. In the most modest way in the world he has remarked a student making clever sketches at the museum, and has ordered a couple of copies from him of the famous Van Dyck, and the wondrous Adoration of the Magi, a greater picture, says he, than even the cathedral picture, in which opinion those may agree who like. He says he thinks Miss Kickleberry is a pretty little thing, that all my swans are geese, and that as for that old woman, with her airs and graces, she is the most intolerable old nuisance in the world. There is much good judgment, but there is too much sardonic humor about Lankin. He cannot appreciate women properly. He is spoiled by being an old bachelor, and living in that dingy old pump court, where, by the way, he has a cellar fit for a pontiff. We go to rest. They have given us humble lodgings high up in the building, which we accept like philosophers who travel with but a portmanteau apiece. The Kickleberries have the grand suite, as becomes their dignity. Which of those twinkling lights illumines the chamber of Miss Fanny? Hicks is sitting in the court too, smoking his cigar, He and Lankan met in the fortifications. Lankan says he is a sensible fellow, and seems to know his profession. Very man can talk well about something, the sergeant says. Any one man can about everything, says I, at which Lankan blushes, and we take our flaring tallow candles, and go to bed. He has us up an hour before the starting time, and we have that period to admire Herr Oberkellner, who swaggers as becomes the Oberkellner of a house frequented by ambassadors, who contradicts us to our faces, and whose own countenance is ornamented with yesterday's beard, of which, or of any part of his clothing, the graceful youth does not appear to have divested himself since last we left him. We recognize, somewhat dingy and faded, the elaborate shirt front which appeared at yesterday's banquet. Farewell, Herr Oberkellner. May we never see your handsome countenance, washed or unwashed, shaven or unshorn, again. Here come the ladies, colon good morning, Miss Fanny. I hope you slept well, Lady Kickleberry. Tremendous bill? Oh wonder, how can you expect otherwise, when you have such a bad dinner? Hearken to Hirsch's combinations over the luggage. Look at the honest Belgian soldiers, and that fat Freshitz on guard, his rifle in one hand, and the other hand in his pocket. Captain Hicks bursts into a laugh at the sight of the fat Freshitz, and says, by Jove, Titmarsh, you must caricature him. And we take our seats at length and at leisure, and the railway trumpets blow, and, save for a brief halt, we never stop till night, trumpeting by green flats and pastures, by broad canals and old towns, through Liege and Verviers, through Aix and Cologne, till we are landed at Bonn at nightfall. We all have supper, or tea. We have become pretty intimate. We look at the stranger's book, as a matter of course, in the great room of the Tar Hotel. Why, everybody is on the Rhine. Here are the names of half one's acquaintance. I see Lord and Lady Exborough are gone on, says Lady Kickleberry, whose eye fastens naturally on her kindred aristocracy. Lord and Lady Wybridge and sweet, Lady Zedland and her family. Hallo! Here's Cutler of the Onity Oneth, and McMull of the Greens, en route to Noirborg, says Hicks, confidentially. Now McMull? Devilish good fellow, such a fellow to smoke. Lankan too, reads and grins. Hi, are they going the Rhenish circuit? He says, and reads. Sir Thomas Minos, Lady Minos, Neps Begleting, Aus England. Sir John Eacus, mit Family und die Innerschaft, aus England. Sir Roger Rodamanthus. Thomas Smith, Sergeant. Sergeant Brown and Mrs. Brown, aus England. Sergeant Tompkins, Angus. Madam Tompkins, Miss Demoiselles Tompkins. Monsieur Cusey, Consular de S.M. Lorient Angleter. Mrs. Cusey, three Miss Cuseys. And to this list Lankan, laughing, had put down his own name, and that of the reader's obedient servant, under the august autograph of Lady Kickleberry, who signed for herself, her son-in-law, and her suite. Yes, we all flock the one after the other, we faithful English folks. We can buy Harvey sauce, and cayenne pepper, and Morrison's pills, in every city in the world. We carry our nation everywhere. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.